Thank you very much, Adam, for an introduction. I'm very glad to be back to Perimeter. I actually was in Perimeter exactly 2 years ago, right before all countries started to be closing. So it's nice to be back. Okay, so what I'm going to tell you about today is anomaly-free special Y-symmetry and particle physics. And this talk will be based mainly on two articles and two papers. One of them is very recent, and it was just posted to archive together with Anna Tokareva, where we found this anomaly-free special Y-symmetry. But there are many other works from which I got an input. The work with Georgios Karazanas and Vladimir Kazakov, and actually many previous works with different collaborators which I had over the years. Okay, so my plan is the following. So first of all, I will remind you what the conformal symmetry is. Then we will ask the question whether conformal symmetry can be fundamental and play an important role in particle physics. I will discuss spontaneously broken conformal symmetry. I will discuss how conformal symmetry can be incorporated in theory with gravity, and I will discuss why anomaly. Then I will come to special Weyl symmetry, explain to you what it is. And finally, I will talk about special Weyl symmetry and phenomenology. Okay, well, we all know that over the years, the Maxwell equations served as a great source for symmetries, which the nature is about. Okay, so we know very well that the study of free Maxwell equations written for the Maxwell tensor F nu, which unifies electric field and magnetic field in one object, lead to discovery of Minkowski spacetime, of Poincaré symmetries, and of Minkowski transformation. So if you look at the Maxwell equations, which are written here in a covariant form, including four vectors, four tensors, and ask ourselves what kind of transformation of space-time we can make so that the form of the Maxwell equation doesn't change, when we will discover that there is a group of transformations, this is the famous Poincaré group, which contains 10 parameters. Four of these parameters are translations, saying that the our space-time is homogeneous, and the Lorentz transformations, which contain three rotations and three boosts. So they are unified in the Lorentz group. And of course, the discovery of Poincaré symmetry is the discovery of special relativity. And of course, this is a very important symmetry which we have. Well, in fact, at the beginning of the 20th century, it was discovered that in fact, Maxwell equations, they have even wider group of transformations. So this was done by Batman and Hohenheim, who found that in fact, the symmetry of the Maxwell equation is not just Poincaré group, but it's conformal symmetry, which is SO42. So the natural space in which the symmetry acts as a six-dimensional space with the signature two pluses and four minuses. And if you look at the way the coordinates transform and under Poincaré group, then in addition to translations, in addition to Lorentz transformations, we have two extra symmetries. So one of these symmetries is called the scale transformation, and this is just multiplying of coordinate uniformly by some number. And then there is an extra piece, which is already not linear in coordinate, and which contains some arbitrary vector a mu, and the piece which is associated with that is called a special conformal transformation. So in total, we have 15 generators in this group. Okay, so how can we visualize different new transformations which appear there? So this is actually very simple. If you take a two-dimensional space, and okay, this is some square with different boxes, if you make a scale transformation, what you are going to do, you are simply stretching the distances, and all the squares, they keep exactly the same form, and they're getting larger or smaller. So what we are doing, we are simply changing the scales, okay? The conformal transformations, which are associated with the second piece here, special conformal transformations, they're doing the following. They can bend the different lines of these squares, but they don't change the angles between lines. So here we see the 90-degree angles between different lines, and it remains to be the same in this picture. Okay, so what happens when we make conformal transformations? Okay, so we can consider the Jacobian of this change of coordinates, and conformal transformations are characterized by the following structure. So this change contains the transformation of the Lorentz group times some function bx, which stretches the distance. So since the coordinate change in this way, the metric under conformal transformations is still proportional to the Minkowskian metric, but it is multiplied by some factor which depends on coordinates. So for instance, if you take the case of dilatations, then this function b is simply the stretch which we have. It's just a constant. This is a global thing. Now, if you take a special conformal transformation, then this function b square at x has some specific dependence on the coordinate x. And so here a mu is an arbitrary four-dimensional vector. Okay, so we all know what Poincaré invariant theories are. We are using them every day, so to say. And so Poincaré invariant theories are invariant with respect to Poincaré group, with respect to Lorentz transformations, and with respect to the shifts. We can construct conformal field theories. So the conformal field theories are the theories which are invariant with respect to conformal transformations. And when we make an arbitrary conformal transformations, the fields also change, and they're changing in the following way. So one part of this change is completely standard and in the same as we have with the Lorentz transformation or with Poincaré transformation. So if you have a field phi with the specific spin, so that phi has different indices here, then this factor here is associated with the representation of phi with respect to the Lorentz group. But now there is an extra factor, which is here, which is this conformal factor, which appears in the transformation of the metric. And this conformal factor is raised into the power, which is called the scaly dimension of the field. So for instance, if you have the scalar field, then normally this parameter delta would be equal to one. For the fermion field, it would be equal to 3/2 and coincide with the mass dimension of the corresponding field in quantum field theory. Okay, so the important fact about conformal field theories is that if the theory is conformal, then it doesn't contain any scale. Okay, so the only Lagrangian which we can write for conformal field theory is a Lagrangian which doesn't contain any parameters with the dimensionality of the mass. And conformal theories are an extremely active area of research. They're very interesting, and there are many reasons why they're very interesting. So conformal symmetry is a symmetry which is considerably wider than the Poincaré symmetry. And so it restricts the form of different correlation functions much more than we used to have just in Poincaré symmetry. So in some cases, the form of correlation functions is completely fixed. Also, conformal field theories happen to be a very important tool to address the behavior of many systems in the vicinity of the critical points associated with phase transitions. So that could be an Ising model or whatever. And also, conformal field theories describe the limiting behavior of different quantum field theories deeply in the ultraviolet or infrared domains of energy. Well, we can ask ourselves, could it be that conformal field theories are even more important and that the ultimate theory of nature is conformal? Okay, so why at all this question? This question appears, but in fact, the CFT may be relevant for solution of the most puzzling fine-tuning issues of fundamental particle physics. So first of all, if you have CFT, so the CFTs are theories without infinities. So they don't require any renormalization. Now we can come to look at that even from more phenomenological point of view. If we take the Lagrangian of the standard model and put the mass of the Higgs boson in this theory to zero, then this theory happens to be conformal at the classical level, when no quantum corrections are incorporated. Okay, and we know very well that the mass of the Higgs boson is much smaller than yet another fundamental scale of nature, such as the Planck scale. So maybe the conformal invariance may serve as a solution to this hierarchy problem, the big difference between the Fermi scale and the Planck scale. Okay, also, since the conformal theories do not contain any scale, any mass dimension, the ground state in conformal theories, the energy of the ground state in CFTs is equal to zero. Also, we know that the another constant of nature, the cosmological constant, is much, much smaller than the Planck scale. It is much, much smaller than the Higgs scale. And perhaps the fact that the ground state energy in CFT is equal to zero, perhaps it's related to this puzzling smallness of the cosmological constant. However, in spite of this very attractive features, There are many challenges which show up if we try to think that the nature is conformal. So, as I have already said, conformal invariance forbid the presence of any dimensional full parameter in the theory. And because of that, the conformal field theories don't have any fundamental scales, and moreover, they even don't have a well-defined notion of particle states. But if you look at the nature, then the nature has both. So nature contains scales, for instance, the scale of gravity related to the Newton constant, where a big scale 10 to the 18 GeV, or the Fermi scale of the order of 100 GeV, or the scale associated with cosmological constant, which is a fraction of electron volt. So these are all scales, we measure all of them. And also, in addition to the scales, we have particles, we have massless particles such as photon, or we have massive particles such as electrons. So, and this goes in a drastic contradiction with what we would have in conformal field theories. Now, there is yet another challenge, which is not that obvious, which is somewhat more subtle, which is associated with the following fact. So the conformal field, the conformal symmetry, as we discussed it, is defined in the flat space time. So this is just a specific transformation of the space time coordinates. Of course, the ultimate theory must include gravity. It's just not the standard model, but gravity is there, and therefore this theory should be considered in an arbitrary metric. It looks like the natural generalization of conformal symmetry of flat space-time to curved space-time is the Weyl symmetry. Okay? I will explain from where this idea is coming from a little bit later. So what the Weyl symmetry does, it replaces the metric at some particular point x by the same metric, but multiplied by some arbitrary factor. Okay, so this factor basically tells that the distances are measured in a way that depends on the space-time point. Okay, this symmetry, as I will explain later, is in fact anomalous if quantum corrections are taken into account. And if that were the case, we are also in trouble. We want to have conformal symmetry, we want to have quantum physics. However, Weyl symmetry is broken by the quantum corrections, and therefore this conjecture that CFT is a global symmetry of nature will be challenged. Okay, so what I'm going to do now, first I will discuss the question, the very first question, namely how to combine the visible presence of different energy scales at experiment and conformal invariance, which look to forbid this type of scales. Okay, so here the idea comes from the following. We know in particle physics and also in condensed metaphysics that there could be different realizations of the symmetry. Okay, so there could be a realization of the symmetry in which the action or Lagrangian or interactions are all invariant if you make different transformations, and at the same time the vacuum, the ground state of the theory, are also invariant if we make the same transformations. Okay, so in this case, the symmetry is explicit. So we see it with the immediate. However, there is a possibility that the Lagrangian of the theory is invariant with respect to the symmetry, but the ground state is not. Okay, and this is a very well known example. So if you take, say, a theory with one global symmetry, the simplest realization of that is a theory of single complex field, then you can see that the U1 symmetry in this theory can be realized in different ways. So the first way is in which the ground state is symmetric with respect to these transformations, and then this theory would describe a scalar particle, charged scalar particle with 2 degrees of freedom, or we can say that it's two neutral particles, but the symmetry imposes that the mass of these two particles is the same. Okay, now if the ground state is not invariant with respect to U1 global symmetry, then we get another type of particle spectrum. We will get massive neutral particle and massless scalar particle, the Goldstone boson. Okay. We still have the same number of degrees of freedom, but the spectra, the interactions of these guys are visibly different in the first case and in the second case. And so we say that in the second case, the symmetry is broken or hidden. How can we realize this idea if we are talking about conformal invariants? Okay, so let's take the simplest example. Let's take two fields, field H. I will say that this field is the Higgs boson, and field high, I will say that this field is the dilator. Okay, and let's write down the classical scale invariant or classically conformally invariant Lagrangian. Okay, so this Lagrangian doesn't contain any mass scales. It contains the two kinetic terms, and it contains the interaction between the Higgs field and the Dilaton. And again, this interaction doesn't contain any mass terms. It's just the fourth power of different fields. And I wrote this potential in some specific way, which contains two terms. And why I did so, it will be clear in a second. Okay, so let's take this potential and let's try to understand what is going to happen in this theory at the different choice of parameters. Okay, I will keep lambda to be positive. Now, if this constant beta is greater than zero, then the vacuum in this theory is unique. This is H equal to zero, high equal to zero. In this case, the conformal symmetry is exact. So if you consider the quantum modification of this theory, we will see that there are no really particle excitations. Now, if you take beta smaller than zero, then the vacuum in this theory is unstable. Okay, so we can get high as large as possible, and then the energy of the vacuum in this theory will be negative. Okay, so in this case, we have no vacuum state. Now, if you take a particular choice in which this term is absent, so that beta is equal to zero, you find out that the vacuum is degenerate. And there is a flat direction in which this part exactly compensates that part. So in this case, conformal symmetry is spontaneously broken. The energy of the vacuum state is equal to zero, in spite of the fact that conformal symmetry is broken. And the spectrum consists of massive particle, the Higgs boson, and one massless particle, the dilaton. Okay. How we can visualize that? Okay, so very simple. These are the pictures which, where we can contrast the internal symmetry, such as U1 symmetry I just discussed, and the scale symmetry. If we have internal symmetry, now I'm writing it, now I'm writing the complex scalar field as a combination of two real fields. So we have a symmetry of rotation here. Okay. And again, if
Misha, I think Lee has a question.
Yes, please.
Yes, thank you. Should I be worrying about whether there are quantum corrections to this action, or is this an effective action?
You should worry about that, and I will come to this point later, where I will be discussing the exact realization of conformal symmetry. Okay, in two, three slides, I will be there.
Great, okay, thank you.
Welcome. Okay, so if the mass is positive, we have a unique ground state where phi 1 and phi 2 are equal to zero. And these are two massive excitations of the scalar field. If the mass is less than zero, then there is a vacuum manifold, which is degenerate. And then there is Goldstone mode, which, so to say, propagates along this valley. And then there is another mode, Higgs mode, which is orthogonal. So in the case of scale symmetry, the picture is pretty much different. Okay, so when this parameter beta is greater than zero, we still have a unique vacuum state where H is equal to zero and chi is equal to zero. This is the case when beta is smaller than zero, and you see that there is one direction in which the curvature of the potential is, so to say, positive, but then there is another direction in which the curvature of this potential is negative, and so this case corresponds to the absence of the ground state in this theory. And so we cannot really construct the theory in this case. And so the most interesting case is here, in where you have flat directions. So these flat directions are not very much very well visible in this picture, but they correspond to this line. So according to along these lines, the potential is equal to zero. We have a massless Goldstone excitation along these valleys, and then we have a massive Higgs excitation in, so to say, orthogonal direction. Okay, so at the moment, I'm still talking about classical field theory. I will come to a quantum case in a moment. But let's look whether we can construct along these lines a theory which can be phenomenologically acceptable. Okay, so actually, this is very easy. Take the Lagrangian of the standard model. Put in this Lagrangian of the standard model mass of the Higgs boson to zero, introduce dilaton high, and add to that the conformally invariant potential, which involves the Higgs field and the dilaton field. Then take this guy beta equal to zero, you get the flat direction in the potential. along this flood direction, we will get also a breaking of SU2 symmetry, because if you are in this flat direction, then the vacuum expectation value of the high field is not equal to zero. So phi field follows and is proportional to the vacuum expectation value of the dilaton field. And that's it, okay? So this is a phenomenologically viable theory, which in which the Higgs field is massive, in which all other particles are massive, fermions are massive, W and Z bosons are massive, there is the scale. However, this scale is not intrinsic. This scale arises because of spontaneous breaking of conformal invariance. Okay, and so all scales in this theory are proportional to one and the same thing. This is an expectation value of the dilaton field. Okay, so the dilaton, of course, is an extra particle. We've never seen this type of particles. We should make sure that this particles evades different experimental constraints. And for this to be the case, the vacuum expectation value of the dilaton field must be much greater than the Fermi scale, meaning that this parameter alpha, this dimensionless parameter alpha, must be much, much smaller than one. Okay, now I'm coming to the question which Lee asked. Should we worry about quantum correction? Yes, of course. And if you use the standard renormalization procedure, which is valid for renormalizable field theories, then the standard renormalization procedure always introduces some scale, okay? So this can be a cutoff scale lambda at which we want to cut our integrals, or we can regularize different Feynman diagrams by introducing Pauli-Wheeler fields, but these fields are massive. Or if we use dimensional regularization, we have a parameter mu there. The role of this parameter is that it provides it explains how to deal with the mismatch between the units of Kaplan constant in the spaces of different dimensional. Okay, so if you are going in this way, then the scale breaks conformal symmetry, and the classical conformal symmetry about which I was talking about is destroyed. So in fact, there is a way how the exact conformal symmetry and exact scale invariance can be kept in the quantum world. Okay, and the idea is very simple. It actually goes back to Engler, Trafen, and Gassmann back in 76, when they realized that if you replace the cutoff or Pauli-Wheeler mass or the parameter mu of dimensional regularization by the dynamical field high, dilaton in this case, then the theory is invariant under conformal transformation, under scale transformation, and this invariance is kept at the quantum level. The drawback is that the resulting theory happens to be non-renormalizable, and one has to add an infinite number of counter terms to remove the infinities. Is this a really drawback? Actually not. If the parameter alpha I was talking about, so this is exactly this parameter here, which provides us a match between Higgs vacuum expectation value and the expectation value of the dilaton, if it's very small, then all counter terms which are associated with non-renormalizability of the theory are suppressed by dimensional full parameter, which is a vacuum expectation value of the dilaton. In other words, the theory which we are getting, it is exactly conformally invariant in all orders of perturbation theory. And moreover, this theory is valid at energy scales, which are fixed by the vacuum expectation value of the dilaton field. So all non-renormalizability is associated with this value. Now, eventually, our theory must contain gravity. And since gravity is not a normalizable theory in any event, then if you make, if the vacuum expectation value of the dilaton is of the order of Planck scale, we will get the same theory, which is on the same footing as theory of gravity. But this theory is exactly conformally invariant. Okay. So now, since I said gravity, let's see what happens if the gravity is incorporated. Okay. And now I will come to the question of why an anomaly, which I mentioned at the very beginning. So how we can let's approach this problem in the following way. Okay, so we take our standard model. Okay, standard model contains different particles which are massive. It also contains two particles which are massless. So one particle would be a dilaton, another particle which is massless is a photon. Okay, photon, I don't care so much about, let me forget about it. It can be included, but existence of photon doesn't change anything in what follows. Forget about photon, take this theory, and what we can do, we can integrate out all massive states in order to get an effective field theory for the dilaton. Okay, and the effective field theory for the dilaton, it will contain just one field, and this is a high field, which was introduced initially. Okay, and since everything in our construction is conformally invariant, we can ask ourselves what would be the most generic action for the dilaton field. How do we approach this question? It's very easy. We have to construct all sorts of operators which contains just a unique field, the dilaton, and which contains different number of derivatives. And we can classify this different terms by writing different number of derivatives. Okay. And this program can be carried out, and all the operators which are conformally invariant and which contain just one scalar field can be constructed. Okay, so for instance, if you take the case when we don't have any derivative, then we can get just one operator which is conformally invariant. This is the fourth power of the dilaton field. Okay, just one. Okay, if we consider two derivatives, then there is again a unique operator which is conformally invariant. Okay. If you take four derivatives, you can find that there are just two operators which are conformally invariant. So there are three operators which are scale invariant, but there are just two operators which are conformally invariant. And et cetera, et cetera. Okay, you can take six derivatives, construct an operator, et cetera, et cetera. So it happens that the operators with four derivatives are very peculiar, and these operators give rise to the Weyl anomaly, and I'm coming to this question now. Okay, so we have this action. we can formulate this action in flat space time, but now we are asking ourselves how this action will look like if we take into account that we have non-zero, that we have a metric which is not flat. Okay, so we can say, okay, fine. If we have an arbitrary metric, let's make the transformation of coordinates, and let's require the same as we used to have for the flat space time. So that after a change of coordinates, okay, we get this factor, and this is the standard factor which we have in general relativity, but now we have an extra function omega, which is an arbitrary function of x prime. Now, since we are in GR, we can undo the coordinate transformation with the use of diffeomorphism. Okay, and then we are coming to the Weyl transformation, in which the metric is simply multiplied by the arbitrary function. So, and this is exactly the Weyl transformation. And so it looks like that if we require, if we want to generalize the conformal transformations to the case of arbitrary metric, we are coming to the theory, which instead of being conformal invariance in flat space time, must be a Weyl invariant in arbitrary geometry. Okay. However, if we just say so, then we find ourselves in trouble. Okay. And this trouble, it was found back in 77 by Michael Duff and others. The trouble is the following. Take some simplest conformal invariant field theory in flat space time. Okay, so that can be scalar, massless scalar, or massless fermions, or electromagnetic field, or whatever. So couple it to gravity in a Weyl invariant way, and then integrate out, consider the loops associated with the matter, and construct an effective action for the metric. Okay, you would expect that this procedure will lead you to an effective action, which is Weyl invariant. But it happens that this is not the case. The Weyl symmetry cannot be kept. The effective action is not Weyl invariant. Okay, perhaps this can be cured by a specific particle content of the theory, in which the contribution of particles with different spin compensates each other. But if you take a generic theory, you will find out that the Weyl symmetry is cannot survive. In fact, there is a pretty easy way to understand how Weyl anomaly appears, even without doing any quantum computations. And this way is the following. As a first step, take an arbitrary action, which is diffeomorphic invariant, which is invariant with respect to general coordinate transformations, and take the pure gravity. Okay, then make a Weyl transformation of the metric in this theory. So replace G mu by G mu times some field high, well, divided by the Planck scale. Okay, so once you do this replacement, you will get a theory which visibly contains now two fields. One field is the metric, and another field is this scalar field, with this artificial scalar field, which you introduced, okay? It's obvious by construction that this theory is Weyl invariant with respect to change of the metric and change of the scalar field. So why so? Because this transformation and this transformation combined together annihilates each other. Okay, so for instance, If you start from just Einstein-Hilbert action R, if you make this transformation, you will get this one. Okay, and this one is a Weyl invariant action for the scalar field in with the arbitrary metric. Now, if you take this action and consider metric to be flat, then you will get a scalar action which is conformally invariant. Okay, and so here is the example. Take exactly the same thing. Remove this term because this term is absent when the metric is flat, and then you will get simply a kinetic term for the high field, which is a conformally invariant point. Okay, and now using this way, you can try to construct all the conformally invariant operators, which I mentioned before. But what is going to happen is that you will find out that you fail. It happens that all operators of low energy dilaton theory in flat space time can be constructed except one. Okay, and since you cannot manage to find a Weyl invariant generalization of a particular operator, just one operator, this means that you cannot organize your theory in a Weyl invariant way. Okay, so what is this operator? This is also easy to understand because this is just a simple counting of different operators. Okay, so
can I ask a question?
Yes.
We know that because of the masses of the standard model, that we can't have a Weyl symmetry in nature anyway, apart from the anomaly. So it's not just the anomaly we have to worry about.
No, no, but this I already explained. I said that if the conformal symmetry is spontaneously broken, you generate massive particles. And these masses, they keep the, I mean, all world identities, et cetera, from this point of view are satisfied. And so that the conformal symmetry is there, just the ground state breaks this symmetry.
Okay. Lee?
Yes, Weyl, when he thought about this, if I remember right, introduced a vector field, a gauge field for the gauge transformation labeled by your dilaton. So he had a one form field B where B went to B plus D of the dilaton field and constructed a set of theories that way. Are you considering that?
I'm not sure I got your point. I'm sorry. Could you repeat, please?
Yes. If supposing we say that the Weyl symmetry is a gauge symmetry. Mm-hmm. So in addition to the transformations in the fields you have here, you have a one-form field analogous to the electromagnetic potential.
Yes, I'm not considering this possibility at the moment, no.
Thank you.
No, so the short answer is no. Okay, so I'm coming back to, I'm coming back to anomaly, okay? So let me tell you from where anomaly is coming from here. In this example showed to us that we use this construction, and this construction leads us to the kinetic term for the dilaton and the kinetic term for the and kinetic term for the dilaton is a perfectly conformal invariant. Okay, so let's now try to reproduce the operators with four derivatives. How do we proceed? Okay, we have to construct all, or we have to write down all operators which are constructed from metric only, which are general, which are different variant, okay, but which contains four derivatives of the metric. There are just four operators of that type. We can take the square of scalar curvature. We can take the square of Weyl tensor. We can have a box of scalar curvature. And, well, of course, we can have R mu square, but R mu square can be rewritten as the Eilert density. Okay, so we have these four operators. And now we apply to these four operators our procedure. This guy gives us nothing because it's already Weyl invariant. It will not introduce any non-trivial scalar field Lagrangian. This guy, E4 and box R, are full derivatives. So these are surface terms, and so they are irrelevant for the action. So this is out, this is out, this is out. We have just one. Okay, so by using that, we can only write one Weyl invariant generalization of scalar field operators. But we have two. Okay, and this means that one of the operators which we defined previously, and this is this one, it doesn't have a regular Weyl invariant extension to the case of the curved spacetime. Okay, and so it looks like that the conjecture that the nature is conformally invariant is skewed by gravity. Okay, unless there is some compensation of different contributions to the Weyl anomaly. Okay, so in fact, there is some flaw in this logic. And I'm coming to explain what this flaw is. So when we talk about conformal symmetry of flat space time, this is a global symmetry. And this is a global symmetry, which is described by a finite number of parameters. Okay, there are 10 parameters associated with the Poincaré group. And then there are five other parameters, four of them are special conformal transformation, and one parameter is the scale symmetry. Now, the Weyl symmetry, which we are discussing here, is the local gauge symmetry with an infinite number of parameters. It is defined by the function. Okay, so if we want to find an extension of the global conformal symmetry of space-time, we better ask, is there a finite subgroup of the Weyl group that generates anomaly-free transformations and coincides with the conformal group of Minkowski space-time if the metric is flat? Okay, so this is the question and this is the answer. So the answer is yes, such a subgroup does exist. And this is a subgroup of the generic Weyl transformation. And this subgroup is defined by these extra conditions which are imposed on the Weyl transformation. Okay, so there is the first condition, so some operator acting on function, Weyl function, this guy must be equal to zero, and the box on this function is equal to zero. So one can check that these two conditions, they conserve the group structure. One can check that if you just consider this type of transformations, then the conformal anomaly is absent. And one can also check that the solutions of omega, they are characterized by a finite number of parameters. So this is not an infinite group. And one can check that if we go to the flat space time, then the solutions for omega exactly map to the conformal symmetry of the flat space time. Okay, there are some analogs, and these are the transformations which we call special Weyl transformations. Okay, so this is not a local symmetry, this is global symmetry. Okay, so the conclusion out of here is that the gravity destroys the Weyl symmetry, but it's perfectly consistent with the symmetry which we generate by special ways Weyl transformations which obey these conditions. Okay, so let's see what this symmetry can give us for phenomenology, and what is the way we can, I mean, I already said that if we take the standard model, consider its conformally invariant extension, then it's all fine. Now we can do the same thing, but now include gravity. Okay. If we consider lowest order Dilaton gravity effective action, then it is just written here. Okay, so there is this term, a non-minimal coupling of the Dilaton field to R, kinetic term for high, and high to the fourth. So the first very essential thing here is that this parameter xi, non-minimal coupling, is arbitrary. An arbitrary value of this parameter xi is perfectly consistent with special Weyl symmetry. The only value which is admitted by Weyl invariance is equal to -1/6. And now this number is absolutely arbitrary. This gives a great thing. This tells us that the Planck scale can be dynamically generated when special Weyl symmetry is spontaneously broken, so that the wave of the Dilaton field can give us the dynamical Planck scale. Okay. Also, the fact that we have this theory, we can check that the Dilaton has only derivative coupling to matter. In principle, if you have a massless scalar particle, this is very dangerous, because massless scalar particle transmits a long range interaction, and this long range interaction creates the fifth form. So this is not the case here at all. So this scalar particle high, it doesn't have any interactions with matter which can produce a fifth form. All the couplings are associated with different derivatives of this field. Okay. This parameter lambda is actually related to the cosmological constant. In order to understand that this is related to cosmological constant, what you can do, you can take this action, go to the Einstein frame by the use of conformal transformation, and you will find out that the cosmological constant is associated with this parameter lambda. So this parameter lambda should be very, very small. Okay. Not clear why. This is the four derivative invariant action. I just flash the slides. I'm not going into detail. So there are different interactions here, which are exist and which are perfectly invariant with respect to these transformations. And I will just flash a few slides showing how the complete invariant theory may look like. Okay, by meaning complete, I mean that it has that this theory has all known particles and also explains the number of puzzles which the standard model itself cannot explain. Okay, so this theory contains particles of the standard model, graviton, dilaton, which we need for realization of our symmetry, plus three Majorana leptons. So the Lagrangian of this theory is Lagrangian of standard model, Lagrangian of gravity, where we have a non-minimal coupling of the Dilaton field to R and the minimal coupling of the Higgs field to R. I again stress that these guys are arbitrary and not fixed to be equal to 1/6 as it would be for the wild symmetry. Then there is this dilaton part, and there is potential, which you've seen many times. And then there is a part which is associated with the coupling of Majorana leptons to the Higgs field and the dilaton. And if you take this Lagrangian, then different particles in this Lagrangian have different roles. So for instance, dilaton and determines the Planck mass. It gives the mass to the Higgs boson. It gives masses to Majorana leptons. Higgs boson gives masses to fermions and vector bosons of the standard model. It provides inflation, explaining why the universe is flat, homogeneous, and isotropic. Whereas Majorana leptons give masses to neutrinos, provide dark matter candidates, and lead to baryon asymmetry of the universe. And I'm concluding now. So my conclusion is that there exists an anomaly free extension of conformal symmetry of flat space-time to closed space-time. It constitutes a certain finite subgroup of the local Weyl symmetry. And this global special Weyl symmetry coincides with conformal invariance in Minkowski space. And it can be kept at quantum level even if gravity is present. And if the symmetry is spontaneously broken, then it provides a theory which is consistent with all available experiments and observations, and thus may play a role as the global symmetry of nature. Maybe it's not there, but it can play this role. And there are several challenges which we find in this direction. One of them is, of course, associated with the existence of flat direction along the dilaton field. Okay, so this is required for the very possibility of spontaneous breaking of conformal symmetry. And this question is associated with the cosmological constant problem. Why it is so small, it's not clear from here. And yet another difficult task is building the connection between the low energy effective field theory with spontaneously broken special Weyl symmetry and its high energy limit. And this problem is not solved. It's clearly a very complicated one. And I stop here and thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, feel free to unmute or clap as you will. Let me start with, before I go to Sergey and Lee, could I just ask if there are any students in the audience who have questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Go for it.
So what about this log term, this log chi? So it appears in the new SWS symmetrical action, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, you mean, Yeah, I'm trying to find this term. But please go ahead with your question, so maybe.
Yeah, so the problem was we couldn't get this term that we wanted to, this log chi, right? From the
yes.
But in the with Weyl symmetrical action, but with the SWS special Weyl symmetrical action, we can get it, right? So that's
correct. Mm-hmm.
Even though okay.
Yeah, this is so this is this term. Basically this one, some of them.
Sergey?
Hello, Misha. So, I'm trying to understand the structure of this transformation that you keep. So this condition on omega, it involves covariant derivatives. So it depends on the metric itself. Yeah. The omega itself, when acting on the metric, depends on the metric. So in this sense, it's nonlinear transformation. Am I right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in this sense, I mean, dealing with it, for example, like argument that this symmetry is preserved by renormalization, usually like with linear symmetries, that's easy. And here it's much less clear. So how did you check that?
Well, you check that in the following way. You can, this is the question whether you can regularize all your expressions in a way that this is consistent with this symmetry. Okay, and the answer is yes. I mean, this is, there is even more with that. Imagine that you use dimensional regularization. Okay. Now, if you use dimensional regularization, you can even regularize everything in such a way that your theory in n in dimensions, which are, is not equal to 4, is completely while invariant. Okay, the trouble appears is in the following. When you take a limit when n goes to 4, you are allowed to add only the counter terms which are consistent with this or that symmetry. Mm-hmm. In the wild case, you cannot find a counter term which removes all infinities. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this case, the number of counter terms which are allowed to add is much wider, and you can select from them the one which removes the all infinities there. Okay, so the answer to your question is yes. It's actually pretty much obvious that you can do renormalization in a way that the symmetry is perfectly kept.
And just as a follow-up, what boundary conditions on this omega you assume? Because you have the differential equation.
So this is a very good question, and I will tell you how the We don't know whether there are global solutions to that equation. Mm-hmm. However, one can construct the solutions locally. And this construction is done in the following way. Okay, so let's consider, for simplicity, the infinitesimal transformations. Okay. You can, and suppose that you pick up a particular point, x0, okay? And fix at this particular point the value of omega and the value of derivatives of omega, just normal derivatives. Mm-hmm. Then this equation here will allow you to find second derivatives of omega. And now you continue your procedure and you restore all the Taylor expansion coefficients with respect to the small deviation of point x from x0. Okay. Uh-huh. And in that way, you will see that the solution to this equation is parameterized by 5 numbers. So one number is the value of omega at some particular point. And this value is nothing but the number associated with scale transformations. And there are 4 other numbers which are derivatives of omega at that particular point. And these 4 numbers are nothing but the numbers associated with the special conformal transformations. Okay, so what I'm saying here is that one can show that, that locally the solution of this equation exists, and it's exactly defined by 5 parameters corresponding to dilatations and special conformal transformations. What happens in a global sense, whether there are solutions to that equation or not, we don't know. We suspect that this is a very complicated question of differential geometry. So we didn't try to address it.
I see. Thank you.
Question.
I think Lee was next, John. Could we go with Lee first?
Yes. You made a statement about the relationship between the value of the cosmological constant and the dilatant field. Could you just make that again? And then if I understood it, I have a question about it.
So your question was a relationship between the cosmological constant and the dilatant wave.
I think you said something like that.
Yeah, so I said the following. So let's take this theory, okay? So this is the lowest order dilaton gravity Lagrange. Okay?
Yes.
We can understand very easily what is the physical sense of this Lagrangian by making a transition from the Jordan frame in which this Lagrangian is written to the Einstein frame by removing the dynamical Planck scale, okay? So after you've done this transformation, you will find out a normal Einstein-Hilbert action. You will find out that there is the massless scalar field, and there is yet an extra term which is associated with that, which is nothing but the cosmological constant, which is this guy lambda divided by non-minimal coupling and times m Planck to the fourth. On this language, we get a cosmological constant problem, but it's formulated not as the smallness of some dimensional full quantity, but as a smallness as of dimensionless quantity, which is a self-coupling of the dilaton. Okay, and so the cosmological constant problem in this language is formulated in the following way: why the self-coupling of the dilaton is so small with respect to one. And I don't have an answer to this question, obviously.
Okay, so I have a simple question. You're always working in the formulation where the connection is a function explicitly of the metric. This is just, have you tried the following? When you make this transformation between the two metrics, the two versions of the metric, could you try at the same time scale the torsion by a term which involves the derivative of lambda?
No. I mean, that's an interesting question. No, we didn't try that.
Okay, well, maybe I'll try it and talk to you about it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, before I go on to Emil, I just want to apologize. I think my computer battery might die before this question is over. So if it does, I just wanted to thank Misha one more time for the talk and to encourage everyone to go have cookies downstairs. So maybe let's briefly thank Misha just in case my computer dies, and then go on to Emil's question.
Hi, Misha. It's Emil here. Hi.
Hi, Emil. Good to see you.
So, let me just understand one thing. You are not claiming that the full trace anomaly vanishes, right? You're only looking at some very specific finite dimensional subgroup of vital transformation.
So, I mean, if I can this symmetry doesn't impose that trace of energy momentum tensor vanishes. This symmetry doesn't impose that.
Correct. Okay. So my question is then, does the anomaly in the other parts of the Weyl group affect your argument in any way? I mean, I guess you can still go with your dilaton construction, but you will still have this other anomaly behind it, right?
Yeah, but other anomaly, I mean, I'm just saying, okay, my effective action is invariant with respect to SWS symmetry period, okay? And and that's it, okay? So there is no more than this symmetry there.
But I guess what I don't understand is how the effective action of the rest of the Weyl anomaly is canceled. I mean, it will still be there, right? The rest of the anomaly will also generate terms in the effective action, which will spoil this.
Yeah, but these terms can be removed by SWS invariant counter terms.
So you want to also subtract those? Okay, that's what I guess I don't understand, right? Is that in one of your papers?
Sorry?
Is that in one of your papers, how those terms are canceled, the effective action of the other parts of the Weyl anomaly, that you're claiming they're also canceled by counter terms?
Yeah. This is in our paper. So in a sense, this is the term, okay, which normally would lead to the Weyl anomaly, okay, where you have tau times E4. So now this term is perfectly SWS invariant.
Okay, I'm a bit confused because usually one says the anomaly cannot be canceled by local counterterms, but somehow you are still managing to do that, you say.
I cannot cancel the complete Weyl anomaly. For sure. So this is impossible. So this term, it does appear when you compute effective action by integrating out matter fields. And this term, since it shows up, you cannot cancel it by Weyl invariant counter term. However, this term itself is perfectly invariant under SWS symmetry. And this is the key point here.
Okay. I'll maybe ask you later. By email. Thanks.
Thank you, Emil.
John, last question?
Yeah, just first a comment and a question. I just want to get back to Lee's comment about invoking the Weyl gauge geometry, because you have an extra vector field. A scalar field, which gives you the full 15 parameters of the conformal group. And you can successfully embed the standard model within this scheme using spontaneous symmetry breaking. So my question is, in your scheme, can you solve the fine-tuning problem of the light Higgs mass? Because in the standard model, the relative corrections to the Higgs mass become very large, almost infinite, if you wish. And this is a standard naturalist problem. Can you solve that?
I think yes. It's not related to this particular talk, but I mean, the short answer is that Sander Mu and myself had last year a paper where we showed that the hierarchy problem we are talking about is not physical and it's a part of formalism. You can construct the formalism in such a way that there are no quadratic infinities and no any other infinities whatsoever. And if you use this formalism, which we discussed in our paper with Sander, then you don't have this problem whatsoever.
Yeah, I must concur with you because as I emailed you, I've published several papers on what I call finite quantum field theory. And the ultraviolet part of the theory of standard model is completed. And then the Higgs mass problem goes away. So I have to agree with you about that.
All right. Well, in view of time, if there's no more questions, let's thank Misha again for a very interesting new idea and talk?